Well, good afternoon. It's about that time. We may have a couple of others who slip in here, so we will be hospitable and welcome them in. And hopefully in the right place. I'm Mary Halst. This is the seminar. Does this sound familiar to you? This is good? All right? If you don't want to be here, you can, you know, you're welcome to leave now. That's fine. Or halfway through if you're like, this isn't what I thought it was. I'm on here. That's perfectly fine with me. I teach preaching at Calvin Seminary, which is the building right across the pond. And before that, I went to graduate school. Before that, I was a pastor. So that's like my life story in 2 seconds. Let's start with prayer. God, we are grateful to be here in this place. Thankful for all of the creative friction that is happening all over the place, for the ideas that are being sparked, for rest that is being had by some of us, and a nice break in our normal rhythms. We thank you for all of these good gifts. We ask your blessing on this session, that it will be another opportunity for good ideas from brothers and sisters to each other, that this will be a session that is encouraging and helpful and is a tool that your Spirit can use to help us become more effective in proclaiming your word. We pray this through Jesus Christ, the Word made flesh.
Amen.
I think I'm going to begin observing a couple of things. First of all, you'll notice how the rooms are set up at Calvin, where the screen is off to the side. Every classroom that has smart room technology put into it is placed so that, and it's better in the new building, here over in the Law Center, the Print Center, so that the screen is off to the side so that the human being is central. The human being takes precedence. Because we believe that good teaching happens human to human, it doesn't happen eyeball to screen. And so that's just one observation about space before we go any farther. When you're thinking about your worship space, what's the most important thing in the space? Is it human-to-human connection, or is it screen-to-screen connection? So that's the one observation I simply want to make. The second thing is I'm using bullet points today. And I'm using bullet points today because, hey, come on in. Have a seat. Hold on. I'm using bullet points because this is a teaching time. If you're using some PowerPoint or using display to teach, if you're using it for a generation that tends to like things decently done and in good order, bullet points work really well. We'll look at some of the other options a little bit later on, but this is where we're going to go today. We're going to look at some foundational beliefs, things that I kind of hold as I think about these things, as I reflect on them theologically, as I think about them pedagogically. We're going to look at some ideas for content, things that you can put up on screen to help people, ideas for display, ideas for use, and then some wrap-up theologically speaking. For the middle three sections, I'm going to have just some really basic stuff, probably some stuff that some of you have done for years already. And then there may be things that you think, hey, we do this. This is a really good idea. Throw it out. All right? This is like common experience. We have an hour together. Don't rely on my knowledge about this, or you'll be deeply disappointed. So let's rely on each other's knowledge about it. My central question with anything having to do with preaching or the preaching event is this. Does it serve the gospel? Does it serve the gospel? So often we're tempted because this video clip is cute, or this image is clever, or this makes us look really savvy and techie, and we're losing sight of the main thing, which is, does this serve the gospel of Jesus Christ? I have this with students when they're writing manuscripts for sermons or when they're pulling together an outline, and I'll say, you're going to be tempted at times to put in a story or put in a joke because it makes you look cool. Take it out. Even if it's the perfect thing, if it's making you look cool, take it out. Does it serve the gospel? That's got to be the overriding concern. The other thing I believe is that preaching is incarnational. Preaching is incarnational. Yes, we listen to iPods and we listen to DVDs, but who are we listening to? People. We're listening to human beings out of a human experience. Jesus didn't become an iPod. Jesus became flesh. The best preaching is incarnational. It's from a human being to other human beings out of the human experience. So remember that. The best preaching, the best speeches and sermons and things you hear are because a human being filled the room. When Obama gives a victory speech for some primary, he doesn't say, and now are my points as you remember them on screen, right? It's incarnational. They try to limit any barriers between themselves and the audience. If you can't preach a good sermon without visual aids, you won't preach a good sermon with visual aids. All right? A lot of people think, well, if my PowerPoint is snazzy, it'll make up for the weakness of my sermon. No, it just means the whole thing is bad. If you're spending more time on your visual aids than you are on your sermon, you also have significant problems. Okay? So don't think that by getting all zazzy and snappy with the images, you're going to rescue poor content. It doesn't work that way. If your content isn't good, it won't be good with pictures. Okay? PowerPoint was designed for business presentations and teaching. Preaching is neither. Preaching facilitates an encounter with the living God. You want your people to leave the worship space, maybe knowing more, maybe understanding things better, but most of all, you want them to leave the worship space having had an encounter with the living God. The best sermons you hear are the ones where it sounds like the guy has read your mail, right? Where she has been reading your journal this week, and she's just right there in the room, incarnational. She is connecting you with God. And finally, you need to know the limits of this medium. You really need to be aware of this. And this is where I think a lot of us, especially those of us in the 40 to 50-year-old age category, we're not aware of the generational limits. Most 20-somethings in your church can put together a display much better than you can, much faster than you can, and P.S., they're not impressed by it. They are not impressed by snazzy technology. Sorry, they're not. If you use bad PowerPoint in classroom teaching, as I've done before, you get bad in evaluations. That was lame. That was pointless. Do you know what the big buzzword is now in 20 and 30-somethings when it comes to preaching and worship? Authentic. Authentic. How was their PowerPoint? It was authentic. No. Right? Authenticity. They want human beings. They spend so much time on screen, looking at screens, looking at images, reading their text messages, that to have a human being connecting with them over deep and important matters is way more impressive. So be aware of the generational limits. Know your audience well enough to know that for some people this is really going to click and for other people this is really going to fall flat. So generational limits. Learning style limits. There are people who do really well if you show them a picture of what you're trying to teach them. There are people for whom a picture of what you're trying to teach them doesn't have anything to do with anything. They don't see how that relates. For them, they want the bullet points. They want the outline. They want the clear. They want the building. They want the logic. For other people, if you tell them a story, it's going to connect with them. So be aware that when you're choosing visual displays of any kind, you're focusing on certain people. See people's learning styles. Okay, so just be aware of that from a pedagogical perspective. Time and energy limits. It takes a lot of time to put this together. It takes a lot of creative energy. It takes a lot of looking for images. One of my colleagues was getting his presentation ready for this weekend, and he's a rookie for PowerPoint. And he said, I was looking for just the right image, and I knew I could find it. And he said, and all of a sudden I realized I had spent an hour looking for this image. Now, you are people in ministry. I do not have to tell you that time is a precious thing. I would much rather have my preacher spend an hour in prayer, in the Word, counseling someone, than I do to have him or her Googling the net for really cool pictures to put in their sermon. Alright? Because a cool image has such a short lifespan. Short lifespan. An hour in prayer, an hour in the Word, an hour with a human being, longer lifespan. So be aware of that. Be aware of where you're putting your time, where you're putting your energy, and where your staff is putting their time and energy. There's a church I preach at regularly, and they like the PowerPoint, and so they want me to have my and stuff together beforehand. And I never use PowerPoint when I go there. I rarely use it when I preach. because of all of these limits and because I want my energy to go into other things. I'm a first-year teacher, and so they say your first year of teaching is about survival. So my energy right now is going into survival. And it's not going into cool pictures for when I preach at churches. All right, so just be aware of the choices you're making. Make them thoughtfully. Limits on equipment. Don't try to play tennis with a golf club. Don't try to do things that your church's equipment isn't set up to do. Don't try to do a really cool thing on an overhead projector. It's so limited, right? Simple visual things that maybe you've seen drawing if you grew up in the church where people would hold up a newspaper. Look at today's paper, right? That's a limited equipment problem because, you know, Grace Ann could see it, but, you know, Casey couldn't see it. So be aware of limits on eyesight. Be aware of limits on lighting. This room, right, wasn't set up for this. This was a late introduction to the room. So the lighting isn't good. Ideally, I'd be able to dim just these lights right here. I can't. Okay, so just pay attention to the limits of your space, the limits of the equipment, and don't overreach. Simple is good. Are we there? We're good? Questions, comments? Ideas for content. Make the biblical text primary. Not the cool video clip. Not the great image. The biblical text. I was worshiping at a church, and they had PowerPoint stuff available to them, and the person who was preaching out of John 1. Very dense passage, right? Word, work with God, what's going on, light, darkness. And he would zoom in on different words oratorically, and I was watching the teenagers who were sitting in front of me, who were doing the teenage thing. And I thought, what if he just put the words on the screen that he was referring to and made them pop out of the text? Now, this is the way the text looks when you just, like, download it straight up. Way too busy for a slide. Don't do a slide like this. Bad slide. All right? This is a little bit better, but what's wrong with this slide?
Too small,
right? The font is too small. We're moving in the right direction. But if you're thinking about beginning and came into being, if those are the words you want to highlight, bring them out bigger. Make them even bigger. All right? Whoops. Sorry. This is a little bit better. Maybe it depends on the word space, but still, if you're playing with the darkness, the words don't pop out like you want them to. Right? Not quite there. This is a little closer. And if you had a dark worship space, this might be where you wanted to go with it. So you can play with color. You can play with font size. You can play with matching things to the banners. You can play with all of that kind of thing. So that the big distraction is that we always want to look at the screen, right? I'm standing over here dancing and singing, and your eyes naturally go to the screen. They go to the screen. They go to the screen. They go to the screen. That's why I hate to eat in restaurants that have televisions. Mm-hmm. Right? Whose idea was that, and can we smack them? Right? Come on. I go out to dinner, and I like have a conversation with a human being. I don't care what the Chargers are doing. Right? In particular, the Chargers. Like, the Lions, but... Yeah. Okay, so... think about where you're drawing their eyes. Think about, you want their eyes to be in the Word. You want them to be in the Word. You want to nurture people of the book or people of the PowerPoint image of the book. Okay? So make the biblical text prominent. You may want to keep that on there. You may want to make different, the next slide, maybe you zoom in just on this and you make life really pop out. And the next slide, you make really light pop out, depending on what you're preaching about. All right? So it's a structure for your sermon. It's not an add-on, okay? It allows your sermon to be stronger than it would be without it. It helps your congregation keep centered on the Word. Now, if I had a picture of, like, a sunset up on the screen the whole time, right? You'd keep looking at the sunset. The sunset didn't change the whole time, right? But you would still be looking at the sunset. Does the sunset draw you deeper into the Word? Does it draw you deeper into my sermon? Does it make you wish you were on a beach where it's warm?
Yes.
So think about where your images are drawing your people's imaginations. Are their imaginations being drawn into the Word, into a relationship with God? Are their imaginations being drawn into, I'd rather be on a beach? Okay? Which, for most of us who live here, very short trip. All right? To think about being on a beach. Quotes with sources is another really good way to use a screen. Say the screen is muted the whole time, and then you get to the point where you say, as Paul Wilson says in one of his writings, arguably apart from the gospel, the church has little to offer the world. Apart from the gospel, the church has little to offer the world. All right, so you make it nice and big, you put it up there, you put the thing on, and then as soon as you're done, you mute the screen. Now, on this projector, we have the ability to mute the screen. So then I talk with you and say, apart from the gospel, the church has little to offer the world. What are we spending our energy on? Food programs, education, all good things, but is it the best thing? Is it the one thing that we have to offer the world? All right, so then everyone's looking at me, and no one's, as soon as this quote's back on, people are looking at the font size, they're looking at the color. I would have gone with a Times New Roman on that. Right? Who the heck is Paul Scott Wilson? What does he have to do with anything? Right? Yeah. Right? And anybody who's technologically savvy is looking at this and going, I would have made that a little bit bigger. I maybe would have had it a little popping, you know, a little bit more. Where can I get the book? Right? Is that a book? Is that an article? Where does she get that from? So if you have a quote or if you have something on there, put it on and then mute the screen and then bring everybody back to you, the human being in the room, the ordained person. The PowerPoint has not been ordained. Here's a mistake to make with a quote. Why is this a mistake? Way too long, way too busy, and it's a fabulous quote. Now, you're all reading the quote. See, this is the other thing that happens. You put in a really busy quote, and you lose people for at least 30 seconds. You could say, I'm giving everyone $100. Right. Because what's dominating the space? The screen.
Could you just move your head so I can see that one word? Right?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So here's a great quote from Robert Brown Taylor, and what is the quote about? What's the quote about? So maybe you do the same thing and you zoom in on the next.
Bible.
Right? So maybe while you're reading it, maybe you say, I've got this great quote. And this is happens. This will work well if you've got a good tech person in the back. And you say, when I get to this point, put it on the screen. So maybe you read the beginning where she says, she goes to it again and again, and the word is always surprising her. Familiar passages, and as soon as you read familiar passages, Tech Joe has it on the screen. You slow it down, and then maybe the next thing, you make this bold thing pop out. All right? So that you start, you zero right in on what you want them to most know and take away. So you don't do the busy slide, but you don't just do this. Maybe you go one more step beyond this to a smaller slide with bigger, okay? And then you've got people drawing back to, what do I love about this quote? The liveliness of the Word of God. Well, then you've got to mute the screen and actually, like, be lively, okay? Because the quote itself is talking about the liveliness of the Word of God. Rob Bell is somebody who does this really well. He uses PowerPoint minimally. For those of you who are familiar with Rob, he's a local pastor at Mars Hill. He is really good with the quotes. He'll be talking and talking. He's like man with a Bible, right? No zazzy stuff. If he does do zazzy stuff, he has human beings doing things. A potter on the stage making a clay.
He sat in a lifeboat, for example.
Sat in a lifeboat. But that's not like on the screen. Right? What he uses the screen for is quotes. Quote from Eugene Peterson, quote from so it can be done well. Alright? You see how it can be done well and how it can be done poorly? Think in images, not just words. One of my friends, preached this sermon And he's a teacher by training. He taught elementary school for years, and now he's teaching here at Calvin. He has a PhD in education, and now he's working on his MDiv and thinking about going into ministry. And so he has all these wonderful instincts about teaching that he carries over into preaching. And he gave a sermon on this passage. Let me back it up one. All right, so this is how he did the screens. See how it fades in and fades out? It's also a great technique in worship. All right, it's a familiar passage to most of you, I would hope. All right, very simple. And then he muted the screen, he has an insert, and he talks about Paul and his love for the church and what's going on here and lays out kind of the historical context, blah, blah, blah. Whoops, do one more. And he just has these really simple images accompanying the scripture text. Okay, some of you probably already do this. But a really simple image about forgiveness accompanying the text. So it's not new text that he's laying over it. It's using the image to illumine the text. Okay? Use an image to illumine the text. And then he just went to forgiveness, joyfully giving thanks to the Father who has qualified you to share the inheritance of the saints of the kingdom of light. So with the bridge image, he's got the forgiveness image from the previous slide. He's got the saints of light. But then he says, what in the world is Paul talking about? What does he mean? He's kind of leading us from this past of forgiveness. We've been forgiven. We're going to inherit the saints of light. And his gestures match the location of the image. All right? So it wasn't like past, right? Imagine the location of the image. Oh, P.S. Here's free of charge little advice. When we talk about timelines when we're preaching, we talk about them from our perspective, right? So first, second, third. Does that make any sense to you? Reverse it. First, second, third for your people. All right? It's just free of charge. No, not an extra.
Does that mean I get my concentrated station money back?
Yes. No, it means you don't have to pay me extra. All right? So simple images that bring people into the Word. Okay? Some of you, I'm sure, already do this. And he talks about Paul's praying for them and how they had it all great. Paul was the person who was in jail. They should be praying for him, but instead Paul is praying on their behalf, just pleading with God that things would be, that their love would grow more and more, that they would, right, just this pleading prayer. Simple image, all right? Image doesn't change, but the image is drawing you back to what?
The word,
right? Paul's praying. So then he talks about what it means to be filled with a knowledge. Being filled, like waterfall. Because God just doesn't fill you like the communion cups so many of us use, the little plastic things. God isn't filling you like that, right? God's not like, there you go, honey. God's like, when a coach wins a game and they do the Gatorade thing over the head, that's what God does, right? I'm going to fill you like that. So this image of the waterfall just points again to the asking God to fill you with the knowledge of His will through all spiritual wisdom and understanding. So the image, again, sustains the preached word. It's not an addition to it. It doesn't distract from it. It draws you back to it. You good? Yes? You getting it?
See, my mind would go to the waterfall doesn't fill anything.
Waterfall doesn't fill. Depends where the waterfall. Well, water always drains out.
Yeah, because right? it's always going down.
Always going somewhere else.
That's the first thing I thought about. So I said, fill, that's not filling.
So pick another image.
I probably put some large container and a small container and show the pouring in that fashion.
Good. Yeah. Great.
Abundant resource.
Right.
Compared to the need.
Great. That's a great thing. I'll mention that to him for when he has to do this again. Somebody pointed out the waterfall. It's a good start, but it doesn't. Yeah.
I just proved your point, though, that images hit everybody differently.
Yep.
Right? So,
yep.
I mean, if I had an image of fruit up there, I don't think I'd have sense of fun to do it.
Right. Right. This also works well, like, after people have eaten. Right? Some of you have had lunch, some of you may have not had lunch, and all you're thinking is, oh, yeah, I'm hungry. Right?
We find some of the time constraints is just finding photos that you can use, either purchasing or, you know, if we're so attuned to copyrighted music, I think we're all very good at that. But the technology makes it so easy to right-click and copy anything because it fits. But
exactly.
That doesn't really...
Doesn't mean it's the best.
The best that we're
right?
allowed to use it.
Right? Doesn't mean it's the best. So my telling you about the little communion cups... And the difference versus the big giant Gatorade thing, that story could be a much more powerful link for this kind of thing than an image. Right? So, things to think about. They drive
would
your
you put a picture
crazy.
Of a coach getting, like, the communion cup, and then the coach getting zapped with this Gatorade?
Because that's, I talk with my students about letting rabbits loose in your mm-hmm. sermons. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, that's a rabbit loose, because people are like, oh, which coach is that? Which team would that be? Would that be the last year's Super Bowl? Who won that? Wasn't that the Colts? I can't remember. They lost this year, but Eli's going. Peyton went last year, and Eli, right? You're just, like, gone, right? People are just gone. So that's what I call letting a rabbit loose. And so often, images and videos let multiple rabbits loose. It's like Evan Almighty running through the All right, but you get the idea. You get what the ideal is. You want the image to draw people into the word, not away from it. Right? Endurance. And then that was the end of. I have mixed feelings about video clips. I think telling is often better than a clip. A clip, particularly for the 20-somethings and younger, is, again, giant rabbit. Because if it's a familiar clip, they spend the rest of the time thinking about their movie. And it's really hard to bring them back. It's like, you know, when your kid is trying to, you're trying to get your kid to eat the vegetables, and you just bring out dessert and you set it right there, right? Even though they have to get this to get that, all they're thinking about is that, right? It's the same thing with video clips, right? If you play something that's particularly moving or poignant or funny, or even if it's, you know, something from The Passion of the Christ, it's such a gamble, and you have to work so hard to bring the attention back. Hey, here's this $20 million movie clip that lots of people spent hours and hours and weeks and months on. And now here's me. Right? So you have to work so hard to bring the attention back that I tend to say use a lot of caution with video clips. So when you're thinking about this, you can think in images, not just words, but make sure that the images match and buoy up. Good? We're good? Other comments, questions, thoughts? Yes?
I just find it interesting that you said that it takes away from looking at the person, the screen, because I come from a totally different setting because I do chapel in a high school, and often I'll say to a student who wants to get up and talk and is just scared to death of having 850 of their peers look at them, I'll say, let's do a PowerPoint. That way they're not all looking at you, and it takes the attention off of you. So in our case, it kind of works as a benefit that
right.
it kind of takes the attention off of them.
Yes.
But, yeah, that's a very good point.
Yeah. Because what you want as a communicator is connection, right? And what I'm risking when I play a video clip is that you're going to connect a lot more with the video clip than you are with me. And if I, as a preacher, think that God's given me something unique to say to this body of people that I love, I don't want to give that time over to the 20th Century Fox. Right? So, again, think about the choices you're making and think about them. We'll talk about that a little later theologically. Display art. for the season or for the series that you're working on. Even in churches that aren't highly liturgical, you can do really cool just art on the screens. One of my colleagues, Betsy Steele Halstead, has produced a bunch of woodcuts for use. You can use these on bulletin covers. You can use these as background to your song lyrics. You can use these as simple art during... like this one, for example. It's the first one. It is in color. All right, so if it's the season of the church year, you can just have these on the screen. Okay? So again, they draw people into the Word. And they use them as, think of them as banners. Okay? And once you buy the book, you have copyright to use all the images, cut them, paste them, do whatever you need to do with them. All right, so again, it's thinking in images, thinking about what else can I put on the screen that draws people into the Word and into the worship and not away from it. All right? It'd be a great Ash Wednesday cover or image to display on the screen, right? Things to think about. Good Friday. She has them for all seasons of the year, as you can see. And because they're black and white, they're super easy to copy. They're super easy to grayscale and put words over if you wanted to use that for your song lyrics. There's just lots of creative ways to use this. And she didn't even ask me to do this, but this book is for sale in the Fine Arts Center on the second floor and also in the bookstore. So she's just a really nice person, too.
Go buy her book.
Go buy her book. So many cool images. And really simple, right? Really simple things. Yeah?
Just a little point with that. For anyone who hasn't used it yet, if you use hers, you've got to resize them. They're absolutely huge.
They are a huge file.
If you don't resize, you're going to slow your PowerPoint way down.
Yep. That is a good word. Yep. You can actually buy the prints, too. Very large. But you get the idea. All right. So maybe you have an artist in your congregation, maybe a child. When we had Advent, we had children who did bulletin covers, and we didn't have screens at the church that I served. But how cool would it have been to have that image up the whole time, what this child had drawn about the Advent story? Maybe for Lent, you can think about adding different things, every screen, like the screen starts simple and gets added on and all the clutter of our lives, or whatever your series is, so that again, people are drawn back to the Word and back to the preaching and not away from it. Book covers, websites, other resources are also good to put on the screen. For those of you who live locally and may have attended a January series lecture here at the college, Deborah Reinstra was one of the people who spoke, and when she referred to a book, the image of the book's cover would come on and the author's name. She wouldn't say anything about it, which we'll get to in a moment. It would just appear, and then it would fade away. And then, this is also a good thing, depending on your worship space and people moving in and out, it's not a bad idea to have these things up either during the offering or as people are leaving, put the image of a book you refer to. And you can see that while you're preaching. I'm going to refer to this book. The information about it will be up on the screen after the service, right? So that it doesn't draw people away, but then after the service, the image of the book is up there, who wrote it, where they can get it. A couple weeks ago, my pastor preached a sermon, and he referred to two websites. And because they were so prominent of where he got his information, he just had the addresses up the whole sermon. So you shut them out eventually, but at the end of we all knew what they were. Like, I can still remember what they are because they were up there the whole time. Just those two addresses very simply laid out for the websites that he encouraged us to go to. Other resources you may want to put where to go for this art, or what the day and times are that we're going to have prayer times this week, or what the scripture memory is, right? All these other resources that If you tie them to the worship and you tie them to the word, it's an easy way for you not have to put them in the middle of your sermon. Because, you know, it's like if somebody's talking to you and they quote from someone, you don't want to have them stop and, like, haul out the book and look at the quote and show it to you. You're like, yeah, I get it, move on. Same thing in preaching. You know, my colleague calls it minimal attribution. You can say, one commentator I read this week said, you know, you have to say on page 647 of Lenhard's commentary on the Catechism, he writes, quote, right? You just mention it and say that information will be later on the screen. So, and different ways to support that. Thoughts, comments? Yeah.
Just a question. I've been to churches where at the beginning of the service they'll just have
announcements.
Yeah, announcements. Do you think that's good, or do you? I just wonder what your thoughts are.
It depends on the worship space. For example, if you're having a quieter service, don't do that. If it's a louder service and people are used to activity beforehand, fine. If you have enough people in your worship that that's their one time to kind of relax and center themselves, then don't distract them. All right. Again, here's where fading in and fading out is really nice in worship. The transitions, right? So it's not like fade in, fade out. Mm-hmm. All right, you have enough anxiety and animated insanity in our lives that putting more of it into our eyeballs on Sunday morning isn't necessary. So I think it's a good way to get information out, but I would mute it like 2 minutes before the musical prelude kicks in. Just shut it down. You're like, nope, we're done with that now. No? So...
At our college campus, for chapel, we found that it helps a lot to play in ahead of time. Otherwise, everybody stands in the back and they're waiting for the preacher to come and help. And the preacher comes in, okay, now it's all time to go to chapel. And just having that ahead of time draws people in and they sit down and they're a little bit more prepared. So when it comes, then that'll play in.
Yep, nice. It can serve as a signal of gather in, people. Yeah, good. John?
One caveat with putting book covers or websites is you have to know what are the things the author has written or what links the website has or who sponsors the website. Like, I know my pastor remembers, they wanted to put up those two websites, then got some emails from people who did research on the websites and said, you know that links to this, you know, or, and so I think if you do that, you can say, I got a lot of good information on this, if you want to check out yourself, I'm not endorsing everything they say or everyone who's associated with it, you have to almost caveat.
Yeah. Good. That's a good word, John. Thanks. Yeah, be aware. Be wise.
Yeah. Or just the emails.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he can roll with it. But yeah, just be aware. Be aware of what you're putting up. And yeah, that's good. Good? Ideas for display. Make your slides or whatever you're putting up clean, not cluttered. Make it clean. Not cluttered. What is cluttered? This is cluttered. Okay? It's just too much. All right? It takes you like 12 minutes to exegete the slide. Why is it too short? All right, it's just too much. People just can't deal with it, right? So my slides so far probably earn on the other side of being like super stark, you know? Primary colors, really basic. But it's so easy, like PowerPoint 2007 particularly, it's just so easy to like, oh, that'd be fun, let's add that in, and oh, let's make this color different from this, and oh, let's change it up. And that, again, is just letting rabbits loose. Like, oh, she's using a different font now. Oh, she's changing the color for every top. Oh, I get it now. Okay. Right? So just, again, simple. Simple, simple. This graphic is courtesy of my colleague who found that online somewhere and thought it was hilarious and emailed it to me. We both have moments like this in preaching, teaching, but not from any of our students who are presently in the room. And you don't have this, those of you who worship. No. Minimize the distractions. Match your font, right? The size, style, format, screen change. Match them. Make them a uniform look. All right? I had one student who gave a speech, and one transition was like star wipe, and then the next transition was the vertical blind switching, and the next transition was, you know, just like, stop it. Just consistent transitions, the same font, the same style, the same size, so that when you change something, you're drawing their attention to why you changed it. All right? So like I said earlier, with a Bible slide content, if you make the font bigger, suddenly they're like, oh, there's something to this. There's a reason for this. She wants us to focus on the word life. Okay? If you're just zazzing it up and making it all different all the time, people don't know what the most important thing is. People say when they look at art, you have to, we have some art in the back wall, but some of it. There's usually three places that the eye goes, and you want to have the central thing, the main thing. And then usually the other two fit out into a triangle, and that's the way your eye goes. It goes first from the left to the right, right? It's generally just, especially if you're English speaking and reading, right? That's just the way our eyes go. So think about these things. If you want to change something, make it so that you want people to look at it, not because you're bored. I'm tired of all this Arial 14-point font, right? Have the presentation match the content. Have your backgrounds match the lighting of your space, your worship space. If your worship space is really bright, then think about how different screens look. A black background screen, a gray background screen, a white background, ivory. Like, what looks best in your space? Don't shock the eyes. This is why I'm a big fan of the fade out, fade in and fade out. If you're in a really dark space and you're looking at white words on a black background, and suddenly you show a picture of, like, the sun or a face or something, it's just bright. It's just... So when you're putting your slides together or when you're putting your presentation together, think about how the eyes move from one slide to the next slide. Don't shock them, all right? Don't... Isn't that people doing this thing? You know, it's like if you come out of a movie and you're like, right, trying to minimize those things. Minimize the pain of your congregation at all times. That's just a general ministry rule. Physical pain. Sometimes they need some spiritual pain. But have the color, think about this, having the color match the rest of the environment. Green slides for Epiphany, for example. If you've got a more liturgical thing, and you've got banners hanging up that are of a certain color, try to weave that in so that it doesn't look like, you know, Tech Joe and Liturgy Barb never got together on how this whole thing was going to look. Okay? It may be a really good thing for Tech Joe and Liturgy Barb to get together more on occasion so they don't hate each other so much. I see the nods. I see you understand. Technology can be a great addition to worship and a great liturgical aid. But we have to teach our liturgy people how to use technology and our technology people the strengths of liturgy. All right? So don't assume that they're just going to get it. That's a whole other presentation, which I don't want to do. Mute the screen when you aren't using it. All right? I've said that earlier. I've modeled it from this. If you're not using the screen, mute it. Don't keep a slide on there that you passed 7 minutes ago. All right? Because people's eyes, where do eyes go? Back to the screen. Is she still talking about that? Has she moved on? I think we moved on. Is she going to have another slide? I don't know. This one's been up for 7 minutes. When does the screensaver kick in on this thing? Okay.
Just a quick question on that, yeah. Mary. This preached at church, and I had given him a presentation. I had my in-between times muted with just a black screen. And he was wondering if we could just keep that same background I've been using on my active slides. We ended up doing that, so there wasn't any image, it was right.
Just the background.
What do you think about that? Do you think it's better to have it completely muted?
It would depend on your background, I think. If your background is a gentle background, right, it's not assaultive, it blends well with the worship space, then it's fine.
Okay.
But if it's like the worship space is yellow and orange and your background's like blue, you know, then mute it, right? So just, again, think aesthetics, okay, when you're putting this all together. Don't give it all away. By this I mean, if you're doing things like I've viewed multiple points, don't throw all 10 points up on one slide and leave it up there for the whole sermon. Why?
you're trying to preach one, and they're looking at 10.
They're reading 10. They're seeing where you're going to go. This is also why, okay, side rant, I hate it when people give me the fill-in-the-blanky things for a sermon. Because I'm a biblically literate human being. I'm somewhat intelligent. I preach sermons myself, although I don't think you have to be able to sit down, look at the blanks, look at the text, and go, oh, uh-huh, yep, got it, good, all right, surprise me. All right? Now, maybe for some of your congregations, that's a really important teaching tool, and they're not biblically literate, and it's really good, and you love it, and everyone's happy about it. Great. But be aware of what you're doing in a communicative setting when you give all the answers away, when you give it all away. And then what happens when you get to the last point? The brain shut off, right? Oh, filled in the last blank, we're done, and you've got this gripping conclusion where God comes down and speaks to their hearts, and they're like, I'm done. The outline's done. Why are you still talking? Okay, so think, John.
What triggered it in me on that one is that I've worshipped under pastors who use that. Some are mega pastors who we're probably all quite familiar with. And it was just their DNA. It was their style. They might have crafted it, invented it, and worked with them. And then I've gone to Pastor B or tried it myself and go, that ain't me.
Right.
And so even though, you know, I think you were fairly negative on that, it seems to me that not all pastors can get away with the same technology.
That's
it has
exactly
to really
right.
be kind of yeah. inherent in them.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's a good correction. I appreciate that. It's like what I say to my students. We're trying to have the middlers, the intermediates, the second-year seminaries, preach without any notes or manuscript. And I'll say to them, for some of you, this is like flying without a net. You're going to be nervous. This is going to be horrible for you. But now you know that. And for others of you, it's going to be like, wow, this is so much better. I'm so much more natural at this. I'm going to do this all the time. And now you know that. Right? So we describe it as putting another club in their bags, to use a golf image, right? Another tool in a tool chest. Another tube of mascara in the makeup drawer.
Yeah, that's nice.
I appreciate that. But it gives them options, right? And so so this, hopefully, you've gotten from this, and there are some things that work really well, right, for certain people, and some things that don't. Like, Jeff Mannion, who preaches locally at Ada Bible Church, came and spoke to our class, and then he and I and Scott Jose went out for lunch afterwards to talk about preaching marriage, you know, preaching married lunch. And he said he's a good friend of Rob Bell, and he often instructs Rob's staff because he says Rob should never teach anyone how to preach because Rob's style is so unique no one else can imitate it, right? And we all know of those people. And so someone else tries to bring a goat into the sanctuary, and their whole service is like, what are you doing with a goat, right? But Rob does it, and people are like, I'm cool with a goat, right? So, and the same thing with technology. For some of you, it's like, oh, this is really good. But again, be aware of learning styles. Be aware of generational differences. Be aware that not everybody's a 38-year-old white woman, you know? So just be aware of those things when you do it. But I appreciate that, John, very much. Other comments, thoughts? All right. Ideas for use. You don't have to refer to the screen. Think about this the way news anchors do. Like an image comes up, and it's not like Katie Couric goes, oh, there's the picture of Darfur. Right? She assumes that it's going to be up there. Right? Now, if you watch Jon Stewart or Stephen Colbert, they often interact with the images. And it's funny because they're adopting the news anchor format and, you know, not doing the news anchor thing, which is, I assume there's an image here that matches what I'm talking about. So don't think you have to refer to it. Don't go, oh, and now here's the picture of the fruit. Do you see how fruit is, right? Okay. Don't feel like you have to refer to the images all the time. We get it. We watch television. We understand what's going on here. We can do 12 things at once. You don't have to use it every week. In fact, you shouldn't. You shouldn't use it every week. Because there are differences in learning styles, and also because I'm going to guess that you're preaching different genres of biblical literature. Paul works great for PowerPoint. Paul works great for this, and then this, and then this, and then this. Jesus, not so much. Jesus is more like, and the kingdom of God is like this big giant mess. There, figure it out. Right? That's Jesus. So think about using the technology to match your biblical genre. Right? What does poetry look like? When you, right? Poetry is like lived out. Poetry is... I was reading some in preparing for this, and there are a lot of people in the emergent church who just hate it because they say, this is so linear. One slide, then the next slide, then the next. And they say, we're just not linear. We're just like all over the map. So maybe you need all over the map images. But the other thing is, I think if you wean yourself off it and do it some weeks and don't do it others, then people start to realize that what is most important is the preached word and not the zazzy whatever's on the screen. Okay? So maybe, you know, maybe your spiritual discipline is you give up visual technology for Lynn. Or, right? So just think about, again, the big question, does it serve the gospel?
I'd rather fast for Lynn.
Another fast for Lynn, yes. Those of us who heard Dallas Willard this morning are all feeling very guilty about eating. But think about not using it every week. And what that would do to your service and what that would do to your preaching. And maybe there would be some really cool other things you could do, some new drama stuff, some use of props. There are other things you can do. You don't always have to do this. Okay? So just be aware of that. Practice, practice, practice. How do you get to Carnegie Hall? Practice, practice, practice. Don't be surprised by your images. I've heard stories, and I hope they're urban legends, about tech guys who tell the pastor, this is what you need to preach on because these are the slides that we have. All right? I'm hoping that's an urban legend. But practice with your tech guy so that, or tech woman, so that he or she knows where you're going with the sermon, what's most important, and do it so that you don't keep having to say, Ike, could next slide? Next slide. Right? Again, because that just breaks into the flow of the sermon. You have to keep saying, next slide. Or you can just control it yourself. Case, did you have a question?
I had that thing this past weekend where the first time I plugged in my key fob and we got a visual aid, and I would walk over and click it myself. It was just for a bunch of high schoolers in a classroom like this. It wasn't a big deal. Well, then my friend decided after the first session that he would only have to do that by myself, so he would do it. And I had to, go back. I mean, that happened like 3 or 4 times in the next 3 or 4 sessions. And it just, it's awful. Yep. It really is.
Right? Yeah. We've all been there. We have all been in rooms where that has happened. Right? Or we've been in rooms where the person thought it was good and it wasn't good. So I came in this room an hour beforehand, and I was like, man, I hope this works, and how do I move from one to the next, and be sure it all, there's a funny, never mind, I won't say that. See, now I just led you off. But there's a funny, okay, I'll tell you. There's a funny, some of you have seen the Jesus Camp documentary. And if you Google PowerPoint and Jesus or anything like this, this scene comes up from the movie where they go in and they pray over the PowerPoint equipment and cast the demons out of the PowerPoint equipment. Which, I've been to conferences where I'm pretty sure the demons were in the PowerPoint equipment. So I don't want to completely marginalize that. And it's just, it's on the internet. It's like, look at these people, they're so silly. But I think anything the enemy can do to make our preaching less powerful, he's going to sign up for. So I don't want to completely negate that. But yeah, Josh?
In your experience, Mayor, are most or more techies running, tech people running the tech, or is there a trend towards the speaker is running it with the software from the pulpit?
There has been historically techie people running it, speakers running it less, simply because the equipment hasn't been there, the technology hasn't been there for the speaker to run it from up foot. All right, so it's like back with the soundboard, we'll put it back there, and so there's this huge reliance on that. Now there's more of this, like the cordless mice kind of things and all these different things you can do. You can have monitors down below so you know exactly where you are, and you don't have to turn around all the time. So more of that stuff is coming, but again, if it's my generation and older, we need training on this. It's not like it's just going to happen. And so if no one trains you how to do it, you're just going to be so reliant on the 18-year-old who's sitting in the back. And I'm grateful that he's in church, and this is a great place for him to use his gifts, so you never learn it yourself, or never learn what's possible. So, you know, yesterday I gave my copy of PowerPoint 2007 for Dummies to my colleague. I said, take a look at it, play with it. We're all teachable, let's all learn. Right? Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were looking behind
me. No,
you're
good.
Okay. Just a note for pastors to really appreciate your technology people and to give them a lot of advance warning, and don't hand them a bunch of pictures that you want 10 minutes before the service. It's so frustrating. And I know before our worship time in high school, we do pray for the technology. We probably use technology 50 to 60% of the time, and our prayer is, you know, don't let anything detract us from leading students into your presence. And there's nothing that can do that quicker than when the next slide doesn't come up. And in a church, in my church, everyone turns around and looks at the guy on the board, you know. And so just really appreciate those people and work with them.
Yeah, they're the wonderful people where everything works fine. They don't get any praise. And as soon as something goes wrong, they get all that.
We had a problem with that years ago. And our pastor at one point actually told the congregation, something goes wrong, you don't turn it up. Don't thank them when it goes right. Don't turn around when it doesn't. And our new pastor uses sermon slides all the time. And what he does is he prints out his sermon Sunday morning and hands it to the guy running the show. And everything that's going to come up on screen is bold. So that really avoids any kind of crazy glitch going on in your sermon.
You want a really good partnership, right? You want to love on the people who make you look good. And so... I love on the sound people and the tech people, and, you know, absolutely. Be ready for anything. Be ready for the bulb to go out. Be ready for the power to go out. Can you preach the sermon without the stuff? All right? People never know what you didn't show them. Okay? They have no idea that there was supposed to be a picture of a waterfall up there. They don't know. They're just going to go with a Gatorade story and let it be good. Okay, so just remember that. Be ready for anything. If you can't preach your sermon without the stuff, then be really aware of that.
Just going to say, don't apologize for it either. Like, I was going to show this picture.
Oh, right. You know, yeah, because we're like, I don't care.
Yeah.
Tell me about Jesus. Right? Yeah. Don't apologize for it. Well, it's not going to work. And then don't get stressed about it. This is the other thing I try to teach my students. If you're anxious... Like, if you miss a page in whatever you're supposed to do and you're, like, communicating anxiety, everyone else is going to be anxious. You're like, oh, I missed a page. Oh, there we are. No one's going to be anxious. So, just remember.
Just a thought. I mean, sometimes, though, you use images that are, where the image is integral. I'll give you an example. This past Sunday, I preached in a sermon on earthkeeping, the environment. And I started off with a picture of, from up, way up in space, 7 million miles out, of both the Earth and the Moon, and then talked about the difference between a planet or a body with a biosphere and one that is just dead and nothing on it. So I thought about this because our technology regularly collapses, you know, for some reason. You know, I guess we got the demons and give me the email address of the people to come pray for them, or we could try it ourselves. But in any case, so I thought about how to do that. But in that instance, and maybe in other instances, the image is really what you're using to start or get going on the sermon, and then if it's not there, you kind of manufacture on the spot. You're kind of hoping it's there.
Yeah, paint the picture with words.
You know, then you have to do that, right?
And then do it so that you're like telling it to 5-year-olds in kindergarten class. All right, simple words, clear adjectives, short sentences. Imagine that the world is completely barren, nothing's growing, and it's just dust, and you could just taste it. It's just can you imagine it? And you put your foot down, dust just comes up every time you put your foot down. Right? So really simple, like kindergarten language paints images. Okay? So think about that. Simple languages. Simple language, simple words. Think about it for your 5-year-old and you'll be fine. Theologically speaking, this is our last little section, and then you can hang around if you want. Does it serve the gospel? Again, this has got to be your big question for your tech people, for your liturgy people. They may want to do a dance, and you can say, well, does it really serve the gospel? They may want to do, you know, a drum. Does it serve the gospel? Your choice of illustrations in your sermon, does it serve the gospel? Right? That's got to be the overriding thing. help your people meet God, not help them meet you or the tech guy or how cool this is or that was a great picture. Help them meet God. Help them meet God. Really concrete way to do that. Send them home with grace. I had a student this week who used, his sister was in that Amtrak train crash, all right, and he used the images from the newspaper at the beginning. And we talked about how he would do that if he would to do it on PowerPoint. He put the images of the train on the PowerPoint. But then I said to them, at the end, you have to have a picture up there of your sister fine. And healthy and happy and good. Because if you put up an image of trouble, you have to have an image of grace to send them home with. The same thing if you play music. If you play a song that's part of the trouble in the world and crisis in the world and bad lyrics, if you play the lyrics and the music to that song, play a good song at the end to send them out with. Because images and audio are so strong that that's what they're going to take home with. So be sure that the parting image is an image of grace, an image of the gospel, an image of the good news. Don't make the one image you have through the whole thing some horrific image that they just can't shake out of their heads the rest of the day. All right? So send them home with grace. You should think hard about if you want to have an image on at the very end of the sermon. I encourage you to turn everything down and then just talk to the people for your conclusion. At minimum, your introduction, all stories, and your conclusion should be told from by heart. So mute everything, shut it all down, and then just talk at your conclusion. Just tell the people the gospel and the good news and send them home with grace. Make sense? Follow-up comments, questions? Things that you thought we would cover and we didn't. Things that I should cover tomorrow when I do this all over again. With a much less intelligent and thoughtful group, I'm sure.
We can come back.
You can come back. You can go back.
What?
John first good, and then Neil.
Good places, resources to learn more about what you talked about today. To learn to use PowerPoint images, media, well. Any good web pages that... you've posted anywhere?
I haven't. PowerPoint for Dummies.
Okay.
I'm a big fan of the Dummies books. I have a collection. Okay. Did you have an idea, Mark?
Yeah, Quinn Schultz.
Oh, Quinn Schultz. Yes, Quinn has a lot of stuff. In fact, let me just do a little plug for his book, Eyes Have Worship, right? It's more of a theological, think about this kind of thing. Eyes Have Worship, Quinn Schultz, also available in the bookstore. Quinn's walking around. If you buy it, you can tap him, have him sign it. Just be sure you mention me. Mary this is a good book. But yeah, Quinn's got some good stuff out there. Go ahead.
There's a PC instructor to that has a course on PowerPoints.
Yeah. The technology is getting easier and easier and easier.
I'm not thinking so much about the technology as
the ideas.
The wisdom of the use of the technology in worship.
Oh.
I know there's plenty of tech stuff
that
I've been finding, but how to use it well.
Yeah, I'm just kind of starting in this area.
Okay.
So maybe someday I'll write a book.
There's a website called Presentation Zen.
Presentation Zen?
Yeah,
nice.
I'm sorry for the...
Yes.
It has very good information about how to create good PowerPoint presentations.
Yeah. Neil, do you have a question?
Well, I was going to say, firstly, I think that everything you said needed to be said, and I think you should write that book. The thing that struck me is, because we get into digital technology about a year and a half ago in a big way, that the tech guys, they have to really work with the liturgy people, because I noticed that we've had to rein them back in, because every time there was a blank screen, they felt they had to put an image up, and they would have to choose a different image for every song, and, you know, it was just getting so overpowering, and nobody said anything until I raised it, and I said, we're putting too much up on the screen, and people went, oh, yeah, you know.
Yep.
So I think you can... you can overdo the technology. I mean, I part ways with you about video clips, but that's because I use them every week.
Yep.
I think that we're in such a visual age that we can bombard people so much in church just to be hip and cool.
Right.
And we're having the opposite effect.
Yeah. It's fatiguing, right? It's visual fatigue.
But that's creative people love to do.
Yes. All things in moderation. Thank you very much.